Company and Rick Raleigh James. Well, there I am. All right, so a couple hours to get together, actually almost three. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And last night we were talking during Monday Night Trivia with Victor. And since so many of you have admonished me not to lose sight of the fact that on Monday Night Trivia we just do trivia, which we did last night, thanks to all of your calls, I said, Victor, we'll call back tomorrow night. We can talk about Wingding and more. And sure enough, looked up on the screen as I got in here, and Victor's ready and waiting. So welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thanks. And tonight, that Pennsylvania station's clobbering in.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I want to write that down because I haven't written.
I think it's WHYF.
Yeah. And it's just all over 720.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I will definitely. I didn't do it after we last talked. I had a little note, and I, of course, ignored it. But I sure will tonight, and we'll see what we can find out, because clearly I don't think they should be on the air at night, from what I can tell. So we'll check it out. All right. Well, thanks for the info. Yeah.
Anyhow, Nick found my song that I like on The Mill Grant Show on Channel 5.
Yeah.
And they play Japanese Sandman, and at the end of the song, Mill Grant says, did you like the record? And this one girl says, yeah, I give it a 95.
Oh,
and he says, why do you give it a high number? Because you can dance to it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely got a nice beat and you can dance to it. As I heard on one, it's got a nice dance and you can beat to it. And I didn't even want to go there, but anyway, we'll play the cellos. My favorite part of that, like I was saying to Nick, is when they stop down cold. He says, "Oh, you guys get to say the good part. All I say is he goes orang type." So we'll play that.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we were talking about Wingding, which was Kirby Scott, Kirby Confer, and a very interesting time to be on the air with that, because that was 1966. It debuted in June of 66. Now, by that time, Buddy Dean had been off the air over a year and a half. And so, of course, the Buddy Dean Show was a lot like American Bandstand, only better, as far as I'm concerned. But it was also a pretty straightforward time, because there weren't many influences like what would happen with Album Rock and all of that. But when Kirby came on, I mean, Wingding was interesting because while some people say it was similar to American Bandstand, I don't think the Mothers of Invention were ever on American Bandstand. So
no, they were.
Yeah.
And my sister was a go-go dancer on that show.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. I bet she has a lot of nice stories.
Yeah, and when she was being interviewed, my mother says, oh, Stephanie, why didn't you dress properly or something?
She wouldn't have gotten a job if she dressed properly. That was WDCA. That was a TV20 that Milt signed on the air. And I think the clip with Frank Zappa is actually on YouTube. So Wingding was quite interesting, because those were difficult times to navigate there through the end of the 60s. It was hard to do a straight dance show, because a lot of the music the teens were listening to was not really danceable.
Yeah, and then Nick wanted me to tell you about another dance show on Channel 14, WOOK TV.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to laugh when you hear this. Couple of times, nobody showed up, but they went ahead with it anyway, and you would see the record spinning on the turntable.
Yeah, this is Teen-O-Rama.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting. I wish, and I realized at the time that 2-inch tape for video was very expensive, so they didn't save much. But I really wish that the soul dance shows were preserved. Firstly, when they did show up, they could dance better than anybody on American Bandstand, that's for damn sure. But the other thing is they were just wonderfully colorful. There was a guy out of, they said Philadelphia, but the station was actually out of Wilmington, Delaware. and Mitch Thomas, and it was a great show. And yeah, Teen-O-Rama was that's like 63 to 70, and
yes.
that and there again, as Top 40 had the problem of deciding whether they're going to play with more bubblegum or harder album rock, you had soul that was going to be for the most part mainstream. Now toward the end of the 60s, it started to be soul with a message, and I'll leave that there. But it was a great respite in some ways. I think that there is a museum in D.C. that has some clips of Teen-O-Rama, but I don't think whole shows are anywhere.
Yeah, I think there's I can't remember the name of the museum, but there's another radio museum in Beltsville, and when my fiance was living, she took me there a couple of times, and we got to have a nice tour, and
that was
to see a little bit of Howdy Doody.
Are you talking about National Cable Radio and Television Museum?
Memories.
Yeah. And I think it was actually was it in Bowie rather than Beltsville, because National Capital Radio.
Bowie,
yeah, that was National Capital Radio and Television Museum, and it is. I shouldn't say was, because it is still there, and it's open weekends like Friday through Sunday, and they've got some interesting stuff. They charge to get in, but it's not a lot. It's like $5-7 or something like that, and a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah. And I was telling Nick, one of the DJs on the Teen-O-Rama dance party. I don't know who did it first, and then I think the Moon Man did it for a while.
Yeah, only he didn't call himself that. We can't say what he did call himself. But I damn fell out of my chair the first time I heard him on the air. So yes. Yeah, from the moon, absolutely.
Yeah, he would start his show saying, "Come on, Big Bad Rocket, you can do it, you can do it."
Yeah, it was fun stuff, just fun stuff.
It really was.
You know, and that was an almost legitimate television show. I think after a while it was Bob King, but Moon Man, like you mentioned. But remember Hollywood Breeze? That was one of
yes.
the guys. And Leon Isaac Kennedy. That was, one of the historically, as far as that, African-American oriented teen dance shows. There weren't many, and I don't think there were any that lasted that long. So
I remember,
there's a documentary.
Oh, WEBB was another good station.
Oh, well, sure.
Baltimore.
Well, yeah, but
when I was at Maryland School for the Blind, I would listen to that station. That was kind of neat.
Well, James Brown owned it.
Yes.
So, sure.
And then after that station went off the air, another station came on for a couple of months. All jobs, all the time.
Yeah. Well, if you're on 1360 AM and Baltimore and the Godfather of Soul has sold you, I guess, what do you do? But as weak as it was and as horrible as the Eatons were, WSID 1010, Daytimer, of course, was still a wonderful radio station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I used to listen to that station, and one of the DJs, Chop Chop Fisher on WWIN.
Yep.
His daughter went to the Maryland School for the Blind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, anyhow.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Always.
And I hope to hear my song.
You will hear
coming in the next
you will
break.
Hear Rang Tang Ding Dong. I am the Japanese Samurai, because I talk about that break that where they stop down so often. I think everybody needs to hear it. So you will right after the news.
Thank
All right,
you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, because the news is coming up in just a couple of minutes, and then it's a free-for-all. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. As long as there's, you know, no social significance whatsoever. That's right. As long as we just have a good time, I don't care. We can talk about anything. But speaking of social significance, at least historically, a few weeks ago we were talking about nursery rhymes that had more sordid underbellies. Well, it turns out that there's even more of them. Yeah, makes you wonder. Now, what I found most interesting when I was reading about this is apparently it was a thing to have children's stories with death. Now, I don't know what they were thinking. But apart from that, there are a few that might surprise you. So we can talk about that. Or as I say, whatever you'd like to discuss, it's up for grabs. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
I am the Japanese Sandman.
You look like a Japanese Sandman.
I go the rang-tang-ding-dong, 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 rang-tang-ding-dong.
I am the Japanese Sandman from across the sea. I got all the girls. I follow behind all the playboy rules. I am the Japanese. Hey, all you babies, pay attention to. I wear a pinstripe jacket made of chunky fu yang. A polka dot shoes made of yang sang. I got a mink from Armington. A purple blue pants from my own Mingo Shanks. I am the Japanese salmon from across the sea. Hey, all you babies, pay attention to. I will go down in the Hall of Fame. I am the Japanese Sandman. All you babies, pay attention to my.
I go the rag tag ding dong, recky sangy, the rag tag ding dong.
And all you guys say the big things. All I get to say is I go the rag tag ding dong, recky sangy, the
rag tag ding dong. And I think that's Alvin Williams, who was sort of the bass voice for the group, but also the guy who wrote all of the stuff, including Rang Tang Ding Dong. So there you have it, 1957 on Apollo. But actually, it was the last thing they did on Apollo that I thought was the best thing they ever did, which was the flip of What's a Matter for You, called I Beg for Your Love. So maybe we'll get to that that later. But there you have it, things you just don't hear anymore. And from all accounts that I've read about it, that was totally spontaneous when he goes, hold it! All you guys get to say all the big stuff. All I get to say. Yeah, just absolutely spontaneous in that session. And they kept the track. And as far as I'm concerned, it made the song. So there you have the cellos. Now, in terms of these rhymes, and again, if it's on your mind, we can change this story to anything you want. But everybody knows about Ring Around the Rosie. And the most interesting part of that is that it turns out historians of proven that it's really not possible timing-wise. Supposedly, this was a reference to the bubonic plague. The ring is a red rash, and the posies are flowers or herbs carried to ward off the disease, and we all fall down means you die. Well, yeah, wonderful. Timing, however, the rhyme was not recorded in print until the late 19th century, which was centuries after the Black Death of the mid-1300s and London's Great Plague of 1665. And no evidence linking rhyme and disease before the mid-20th century, actually. So where that originated, who knows? Versions of it vary kind of wildly, and versions of the words also vary pretty much as well. But the plague theory is one of the most widespread things and turns out just not true. Now, with regard to London Bridges falling down, there might be something there. Supposedly, there's an unsettling Echo of Truth, and the deal that they say, and in the early versions, additional verses proposed ways to rebuild the bridge: wood and clay, brick and mortar, iron and steel, even silver and gold. Before finally suggesting a different solution entirely: set a man to watch all night, and some versions mention that he's imprisoned. So that last detail is what fascinated folklorists, because stories about human sacrifices connected to bridges apparently were not unknown. And according to the legends, bridges, walls, and gates required a living person, often a child, to be tasked within the foundations and located within the foundations so their spirit could guard the structure, ultimately killed within the foundations. That's right. So the spirit could, in fact, guard and preserve the bridge from collapse. And that's pretty out there as far as that goes. And those who look at the history of these things say that it's possible London Bridge is the only nursery rhyme where there's justification for suggesting that it preserves the memory of a dark and terrible rite of past times. What? Yeah, kill people and put them in the bridge? Well, it doesn't mean historians think medieval Londoners routinely imprisoned children inside bridges and killed them. Direct evidence connecting the rhyme to an actual sacrifice is absolutely lacking, I'm pleased to say. But similar bridge legends appear. Germany to Greece and everywhere in between, stories of foundation sacrifices persisted. Yeah, pretty much almost to this day. And it's entirely possible the song does have dark origin, but who knows? Then there's Humpty Dumpty. Yeah, had a great fall, don't you know? And it does not conceal a tale about the English Civil War. That's online, too. One popular theory claims it was Humpty Dumpty was a massive cannon used by royalists that was toppled from a wall during the Siege of Colchester in 1648. Yeah, just days ago. Another says it was a siege engine, a device used to destroy heavy fortifications employed during the Siege of Gloucester. Historians dismiss that one as well. The simpler explanation is also the oldest one. Humpty Dumpty was originally written as, "What am I?" a riddle. And the answer was, "An egg." All right, so early sources explicitly describe it that way. Though, of course, modern readers will go to any extent. Lewis Carroll, 1871 novel, Through the Looking Glass, turned Humpty Dumpty into an anthropomorphic egg, so why not? All right, but once you know it's a riddle, the strange details make a little more sense. And so it actually never says that Humpty Dumpty is an egg, because riddles don't give away their solutions. All right, who killed Cock Robin? "I," said the sparrow, yeah, and on it goes. That's the one where I got the notion from the historians that, oh my God, there's something to death and kids' tales here. And obviously, Who Killed Cock Robin does not hide its darkness, to say the least. It's open there, and there were a number of books that were popular at the time under titles like The Death and Burial of Cock Robin, and some are suggesting it's political satire and all that, but regardless, this was the part. Apparently, there's a broader tradition of mock funerals, animal ballads, and playful death imagery common to Victorian-era children's culture. Oh, does it? That say a lot. So compared with many nursery rhyme conspiracy theories, the darker interpretations of Cock Robin are somewhat intriguing, though I think even more so to think that, oh, that's the way children's tales were. Yeah, well, it explains so much, don't you think? Then, of course, we'll conclude with, I don't know, Jack and Jill or Mary Mary, quite contrary, both of which have stories. And of course, you probably heard about that. And Jack and Jill was not the plague. And you know, they'll blame anything on the plague. As far as Mary Mary, quite contrary, Mary, Queen of Scots, arguing all the pretty maids in a row or famous ladies in waiting. Well, folklorists are unconvinced about that, too. So, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, talk about one of my favorite things, the Sea Crane Company. And I'll tell you what, we have so many of the Sea Crane products in the house. I'm almost countless amount. If they make it, I want it. And by John's bedside, he has the CC Radio 3, and I have the CC Radio 2E. And the CC Radio 3 includes Bluetooth. And I'll tell you what, the sound of this radio is good enough that you'll want to use it as your Bluetooth speaker, and you can do that. But more than that, if you're looking for a terrific radio that has killer reception, AM and FM, NOAA weather alerts and the weather band and that Bluetooth connectivity and the 2-meter ham band, it's all in the CC Radio 3. And right now, if you've been holding off on the CC Radio 3 because you're saying, oh, a little on the pricey side, well, this week, 10% off your order. 10% off your entire order. So even if you order something other than the CC Radio 3, you'll get a nice discount. But if you listen primarily for voice content, the CC Radio 3 is arguably worth it for that alone. Audio quality for the spoken word is, in some cases, sounds like the host is sitting right next to you. But it's got separate bass and treble controls. And what I like about it is everybody kind of has their own feeling about what's the perfect sound. And you can fiddle with this and customize it to be the perfect sound for you, whether it's clear and natural, or maybe there's a heavy end of bass or whatever you want. It's there. And this week only, save 10% on your entire order. Now, you can go online, ccradio.com, ccradio.com, anytime, and you can take a look at the CC Radio 3. And the catalog's wonderful because it's not only great products, it's great information about radio as well. So it's a real must-have bookmark as far as I'm concerned. But if you can't go online, they've got terrific customer service, and you can call them. 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-T-U-N-E. Easy to remember, because they've got fine tuning, if nothing else. 800-522-TUNE. They'll answer all your questions, and you can order right by phone. So this week only, save 10% on the CC Radio 3, a wonderful addition. John swears by it. And yeah, I know it's terrific, and I think you will like it as well. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Dreaming, I'm always dreaming. Dreaming, love will be mine. Searching, I'm always searching. Hoping, someday I'll find someone to love me. Someone who needs me, but until then, well, I'll keep on dreaming, keep right on dreaming, dreaming, till my dreaming comes true. Dreaming, I'm always dreaming. Dreaming, love will be mine. Searching, I'm always searching. Hoping, someday I'll find someone.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Carl in Chicago requested it, so we played it. Johnny Burnett, Dreamin', 1960, on Liberty. And I'll tell you what, he was the younger of the Burnett brothers, Dorsey being the older. And when they formed the Johnny Burnett Trio but I think it was like 1952, that was just, I think Paul Burleson was the third of the trio, but just absolutely influencing, to say the least. You know, a lot of rockabilly started right there. And sadly, didn't hear too much of him because he died in 1964 in Clear Lake, California. And it was a sad deal all the way around. But he got all, and by the way, it was a fishing boat that was struck by a cabin cruiser, and the impact threw him off the boat, and that was it. And, you know, that was the end of that. But, of course, Dorsey went on and did some things that were certainly credible. But the Johnny Burnett Trio, or was it originally called the Rhythm Rangers, was wonderful. They got an audition on the Amateur Hour, and they won. I think they won, like, three times in a row, and they got in the finals. And it gave them a recording contract on Coral, and then the Rock and Roll Trio was what they became. And then later, of course, the Johnny Burnett Trio, and just great stuff. And what can I say? So Carl has good taste there. Now James in on the South Side is back in full force with plenty of stories. But again, James, you sent me a video. I have no idea what it says because I don't do video.
Okay, let's see. I think I'd sent you one about. There was something about a dog and a becoming like a best friends with a baby.
Well, that's not the one. The one that floated in my boat, as far as that is the Florida woman legally married to a carnival ride. Now, the interesting thing is she identifies herself as objectum sexual. See, I never saw that as any of the choices, but apparently it's a documented psychological orientation in which a person develops genuine romantic and emotional attachment to inanimate objects. This, by the way, would perfectly explain AI, but I digress. Her partner of choice is a 70-foot skydiver carnival ride named Bruce. She has a committed relationship with Bruce and has had that for years. They have anniversaries and candlelit dinners, and I don't know how Bruce partakes in that. Describes their dynamic as an old married couple. She spent $90,000 of her own money to restore Bruce after he fell into disrepair. An act of devotion most humans would not extend to other humans, but nonetheless, the ceremony was real. The legal status was not. Apparently, Florida law requires both parties in a marriage appear in person to apply for a license. And there are very few government buildings with doors large enough to admit Bruce. So, and he couldn't sign the paperwork. So there's no legal standing as far as that goes. But, you know, both partners having to show up in person, what's stopping from someone from marrying a Saint Bernard? No, don't even go there. But, you know, as we as we think of things like you can only your lawfully wedded spouse can, you know, get your Medicare if you die, or your Social Security if you die, whatever. Well, why not? A Saint Bernard sounds good to me. So apparently this is absolutely true, which explains Florida in ways I otherwise couldn't.
Yeah, when I saw it, I thought, are we kidding? I mean, I admit to have loving rides. Those type of rides, long rides and stuff like that. But that is a devotion that I guess you could say. It's in the words of Johnny Mathis, it's incredible.
Yes, it's special. And there's another woman who married the Eiffel Tower. But I suspect that the Eiffel Tower engages in bigamy, because I'm sure she's not the only one, it being so famous and all. And then there was a man who declared his full romantic commitment to a Volkswagen Beetle that he apparently had owned for 30 years. Obviously, this is not a man of good taste. So apparently, the deal is that these people are willing to go public about it, and Linda wants you to know that her relationship with Bruce is going extremely well. All right, then, you've ended the hour. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for the link. It was a lot of fun.
Okay,
all right, good
deal.
You're
welcome.
Thanks.
I hope you. There was a couple of potential questions in there for you.
I will take a look at that. I promise. All right, so we'll pick it up next hour. We got Mike in Elmwood Park, who's got an update and some requests, too. And your calls are more than welcome coming up on WGN Radio.
You can never
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Cello's record I was talking about. Orangutan Ding Dong was the first thing they released on Apollo in 1957, and I Beg for Your Love, a flip side, was the last thing in 1958. Their entire career was four singles, pretty much. And, of course, Orangutan Ding Dong being the most memorable. Alvin Williams, the bass singer, wrote them all. And the interesting thing about that is that virtually disappeared after that. All of these guys, they're from Manhattan, and there was Alton Campbell and Billy Montgomery and Cliff Williams and Bobby Thomas and Alvin Williams. And if they did anything else, I don't know. But I thought that was just a gorgeous record. Talk about a woulda, coulda, shoulda. All right, so we've got Fran and Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. I was wondering about the nursery rhyme that sing a song of sixpence, pocket full of rye, 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. When the pie was open, the birds began to sing. Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before a king? I wonder what that was all about.
Yeah. And, of course, we're finding out that most of the people who have these great stories, someone along the way made them up. But Sing a Song of Sixpence was an 18th century ditty, and apparently it's listed in the Roud Folk Song Index, so that's what it's considered. And it was first minted in 1551. And as far as that goes. Now, a sixpence, that has been out of fashion since, what, 1971? Obsolete around 1980. But, you know, there are many people who think that maybe it was from Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. Come on, there's a sixpence for you. Let's have a song. And in Beaumont and Fletcher's 1614 play, Bonaducha contains the line, "Whoa, here's a stir now, sing a song of sixpence." It's been attributed to George Stevens, who used it as a pun at the expense of poet laureate Henry James Pye, but that's P-Y-E. But the first verse had already appeared in print as Tommy Thumb's Pretty Songbook before that. So, sing a song of sixpence, a bag full of rye, 4 and 20 naughty birds baked in, boys baked in a pie. The next printed version that survives comes from 1780, and there were two verses, and the boys were replaced by the birds. So originally they were 4 and 20 naughty boys, and then 4 and 20 naughty. Yeah, I know. None of my, us.
For some reason, that 4 and 20 blackbirds, and when the pie was open, the birds began to sing. That darn thing freaked me out.
Well, yeah.
And it's just like, ooh, you open this pie and these birds are singing, and, you know, I don't know. I have a weird fear. Well, I don't mind, like, you know, little birdies in the trees where they're supposed to be, but my mom had a bird that she used to sometimes let out of the cage, and it would fly around, and it was, it kept... Please don't do that. It scared me to death. I don't know what it was. I guess because they're so unpredictable and they can be anywhere. And, you know, they used to land sometimes on my head and pick at my hair. And I don't know. I just don't like when people just let birds fly around their house, or if a bird flies over me or something like that, I get a little bit weird. I'm not sure what it is. And I've talked to a couple of other people who feel that way about birds. And
yeah.
I'm not sure what... I don't know if there's something called... I don't know what you'd call it. Phobia?
Right, exactly. Possibly, or we can talk maybe it's a past life, or who knows. But there was an Italian cookbook in 1549 that contained a recipe placing live birds into a pie. To make pie so that birds may be alive and then fly out when it is cut up was referred to in a cookbook in 1725 by John Knott. The wedding of Marie de Medici and Henry IV of France in 1600 contained some parallels. The first surprise, though, came shortly before the starter when the guests sat down, unfolded their napkins, and saw songbirds fly out. The highlight of the meal was the sherbets of milk and honey, which were created by God knows what bird. Nothing I can pronounce. So.
Oh my goodness! I would have left that dinner party.
Well, you and me both. But in 1951, we had the Oxford Dictionary of Nursery Rhymes by the Opies, Iona and Peter. And write, the rhyme has been tied to a variety of historical events, that's the frightening part, or folklorish symbols such as the queen symbolizing the moon, the king the sun, and the blackbirds the number of hours in a day. Or, as the authors indicate, the blackbirds have been seen as an allusion to monks during the period of the dissolution of the monasteries. These are people who have far too much time on their hands. And they have Catherine of Aragon representing the queen and Anne Boleyn, the maid. The rye and the birds have been seen to represent a tribute to Henry VII. And on another level, the term pocketful of rye may in fact refer to an older term of measurement. The number 24 been tied to Reformation and the printing of the English Bible with 24 letters. From a folklorish tradition, the blackbird taking the maid's nose has been seen as a demon stealing her soul. There's no corroborative evidence for any of the foregoing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all these are nursery rhymes for kids. Yeah, I heard that the ring around the rosy was a diphtheria thing.
Yeah, well, apparently it's any type of plague, you name it, you insert here. But apparently the answer is none of them. And then there's one that says, well, no, Blackbeard the pirate created Sing a Song of Sixpence with lyrics as a code to recruit new crew for the pirate ship. Blackbird had nothing to do with the song. And then Snopes talks about it, but, you know, who would believe that no matter what? And the bottom line is sixpence, of course. The coin was a decent amount of money back then, and a pocket full of rye was a bag of whiskey rye. Oh, well. So the blackbirds were the pirates who worked for Blackbeard. And they're being baked in a pie as the pirates setting up a ruse to raid a nearby ship and capture it. Well.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Gary made a joke. He said, I wonder if they came out singing Walking in Rhythm.
Really? Exactly. That'd be great. So why not? Apparently, there have been television shows about this this topic. Mostly True Stories in 2003. I don't know what network that was. Urban Legend Reveals. And it asked, was the nursery rhyme Sing a Song of Sixpence uses a code to recruit pirates? And apparently, the show claimed it was true. And it's since been found out, no, it wasn't. The show used Snopes as their source. Oh, God. And then Snopes posted a page about their mistake. Oh, great. Yeah, no, I'm telling you, you can't believe TV no matter what you're seeing. All right. So, I don't know as far as that goes. So, apparently, it's got a long history, but birds came later. It was boys originally.
Oh, okay. And speaking of the blackbirds, I would like to request Walking in Rhythm.
Oh, absolutely. Let me get that out here.
And the other one I want to hear is Lover, Please.
Please come back. Don't be a pain one around the track. Okay.
Down the track.
Yeah. Let's see. Yes, I already put the blackbirds up. I'm going to play, the Mystics' Hushabye. That was Mike's request. Then I'll play the blackbirds. And after the blackbirds, I've already forgotten the other one you just mentioned. Oh, God.
Oh, Lover, Please.
Oh, yes, of course. How could I forget Lover, Please? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Okay.
All right, we will do it to it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
I appreciate it.
Bye.
All right. So, Hushabye will come up right after this on WGN Radio.
Hushabye, hushabye. Oh, my darling, don't you cry. Guiding angels up above. Of the one I love. Oh, hush, hush, hushabye. Oh, hush, hush, hushabye.
Hushabye, hushabye. Oh, my darling, don't you cry. Guardian angels up above, take care of the one I love. chairman will be coming soon, singing you a slumber tune.
Oh, hush, hush, hush.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, signature New York doo-wop. I'll tell you what, 1959 on Laurie, five Italian guys from Brooklyn who you never heard of before and you've never heard of since. I always wonder about that. They were on, as mentioned, they're on Laurie, and they put out, I don't know, half a dozen records, maybe singles, and then that's it. What happened to these people? And when you start to try and find out, You'll see all sorts of incorrect things, like a couple of guys from Minneapolis who supposedly were in the group, not at the time. All right, so that was Mike and Elmwood's request, though, and Mike apparently has an update. All right, well, and we want to hear it too. So, Mike, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh, thank you for the request. My wife, she finished her therapy on the vertigo.
Okay,
and the last session, they gave her, kind of massaged her neck with some, massager, and they put some kind of electrodes on it to see how her muscles and everything worked, and then they had her lay down and everything to see where they move a certain way and see where she gets dizzy. But they asked her, other than that, they said, well, how do you feel otherwise? I feel fine. So he only had like four sessions, and they released her.
Okay.
You know.
Well, so now, since then, has she had any attacks?
Not that I know of.
Good.
Not that I know of.
Good.
What's that?
That's good.
Just on her muscles, you know, her back of her neck kind of hurt because they really kind of worked it in, you know. And she said she felt good once I got down, but then, you know, I think a couple of days later, I think her neck was bothering her, but that could be from, you know, something that they worked. It hasn't been worked probably in years, you know.
Well, but, here's hoping she has no more vertigo.
I hope not either, Raleigh, because I'll tell you, it's something when you're sitting there and the room is spinning and you're not.
Oh, believe me, I know firsthand, yes.
But I appreciate the request being played, and get you out every night.
Well, it's great to have you listening, and I'm so glad your wife's doing better. Keep us posted. Hopefully it's only good news from here on out.
I will do, and I'll call you again for a couple of requests.
Sounds good. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take
care.
All right.
So, well, that's a good story. Hopefully that will continue. So we have Laura in Willowbrook. Welcome back to WGN Radio. How you doing, Laura?
I'm doing great, Raleigh.
Good.
How are you? I'm about my medical issue, but I really found it kind of funny driving around my neighborhood. There's a sign, Muddy Waters Park, and I like his music, and I wanted to request any song that you would like. And I just, where did they get this? Why is he in a park named in my area?
Right, absolutely, Muddy Waters MX in East Moline. So he died in his sleep in Westmont in 1983, I think, and taken from there to Good Sam and Downers Grove. But why not? As far as that goes. A couple of years after his death, Chicago designated about a block section of East 43rd near his home, the honorary Muddy Waters Drive. And that was part of the Chicago Blues Festival. And but why the park? And then, of course, the first thing you think is it the same Muddy Water? How could it not be? So let's try to find out about the park.
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
Yeah.
And how it started anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I absolutely don't know. He had songs like Walking Through the Park, but I don't know if it was a park in particular. Why there?
That's cool. Well, thank you very much.
Well, yeah, I'm glad that you called. Thanks. Well, I'll look that up. I'm very curious. Hopefully I'll know by the time the news is over. Appreciate it.
All right. Howie, thank you.
All right. So, Muddy Waters Park. All right. Let's find out. And then we'll get back to, we've got Chris, we got Robert, we got Brian, and room for you two on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and there it is. The Blackbirds, having nothing to do with pies or birds as far as that goes, but that's because, of course, Donald Byrd. And boy, was he ever accomplished. And I think the last thing he did was teaching in the D.C. area at Howard. But he was, you know, quite the composer, American jazz trumpeter and band leader and all that. But he wound up in his spare time going to school, like a lot. He got a master's of education at Manhattan School of Music, and then he wound up getting a law degree from Howard and a doctorate from Columbia. And he taught in the 60s in particular at a number of schools, Rutgers, NCCU, and like I say, Howard, and formed the Blackbirds. And so that was the deal. Originally from Detroit, went to Cass. Yes, Cass Polytech, same as Diane Ross, when she was still Diane Ross. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888, Raleigh. And let's see, I will get Laura's request. Oh, we're going to get to Johnny here in a moment, Johnny Goen, because John said he's running out of time. Aren't we all? I'll tell you what. Now, here is the deal. So I look up, I almost choke saying this. I look up Muddy Waters Park, thinking, well, let me go to like an official source, Parks Commission and all that. And I get to some site, I'm not even going to name it, but it tells me that it's named Muddy Waters because Muddy Waters was born nearby. Now, this was quite a shock to me and everybody else in Clarksdale, Mississippi, where he lived from the time he was born until he was about 30. Then he moved to Chicago. The reason I went to several other sites is because the last 10 years of his life, he lived nearby, and the Park Commission thought it would be nice to name it after him. And it's actually kind of funny when you think of Muddy Waters, because it's a flood control park. So there you have the story. And it was a tribute to Muddy, and they did a number of other parks as well. But yeah, the one that said he was born nearby, I'm like, man, I tell you what, they'll write anything on the internet. So Johnny and Austin, welcome back to, wait a minute here, Magic Twanger's out of commission again. Well, now, this is terrible. It was working moments ago. Maybe if I shake it, I don't know. Ah, here we go. So, Johnny, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Sound like you got a technical day like mine.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I'm not even going to talk about it. I've got some type of a broadband storm that's lowering my speed and ping time. And well, anyway, yes, it's one of those things.
Yeah, I've been going through the same thing. My point was, I've been working on this Jackie Wilson interview, and I got to think, and I just turned on your show because I've been involved in all this, but has anybody brought up the fact that Jackie Wilson was born on this date?
Yesterday.
Yes,
we talked about it yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Just in passing. And then I said, yes, I would play something, but it wouldn't be any of his ballads. Because, you know, as much as I love absolutely love his up-tempo stuff. His ballads, oh man, I run.
Oh, you don't care for him?
None of them.
Oh, okay. I got you. Well, I just... I've got this interview that I did with him on the phone. I didn't ever meet him, but I did it on the phone when he was at Channel 11 in Houston back. Uh-huh. And I recorded this. I've got the tape. I found the raw tape.
Good.
And it's on good tape, not the back treated stuff you got to bake.
You're right. Shamrock. Yes, I understand.
I've got it. Yeah, in my hand, and it was. I recorded this with him on April 10th of 1974 for KLVI in Beaumont, Texas.
Okay.
There was a guy and myself that did a two-man oldie show on Saturday on KLVI 560 in Beaumont.
Okay.
And we did, Jackie Wilson was one of our guests. We had Hank Ballard, Bill Doggett talking about how Honky Tonk came along. I think I sent you interview several years ago. But with regard to Jackie Wilson, he's real special to a lot of people. And there's this gentleman that's got this Facebook on Jackie named, his name is Will Howard out of Alabama somewhere. Okay. And anyway, he is Jackie Wilson to the max. And there's pictures and everything, all kind of links to Jackie Wilson stuff. I mean, this guy's got a passion for Jackie Wilson and a real story about how he learned about Jackie Wilson through his mother when he was 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
This guy, Will Howard. And he discovered him when he was a little boy. And he said the day that Jackie Wilson passed, which was back in 84 sometime, he said his mother just, oh my gosh, Jackie Wilson is gone. He's died. And little Will, 10 years old, he said, who is Jackie Wilson? She said, well, you got Prince and you've got so-and-so, but and you got Michael Jackson, but we had Jackie Wilson. And so he said, well, I don't know anything about Jackie Wilson. He said, well, his mother said he's slim, trim, and had it all.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had a collection of his music, so this young Will Howard, who was in like the fifth grade in Huntsville, Alabama at the time, started listening to his music.
Uh-huh.
And fell in love with the music of Jackie Wilson back when he was a little kid. And it's been his passion ever since. So he created this site on Facebook called Jackie Wilson Music and A&D Memories. And it's certainly a sight to see if you love Jackie Wilson. And I wanted to ask you,
interrupt. I find it interesting that his mother was upset over Jackie's death, which was January of 84. I was elated from the standpoint of for him.
Oh, that.
Because this man collapsed in September of 75 at the Latin Casino in Cherry Hill. I don't know that he ever came out of the coma, but he certainly was incapacitated. And that was the longest 8 years of anybody's life. And, you know, what a tragic event. But, man, 8 years in that condition, that was just horrible. Now, the next thing is you're aware of Bobby Brooks Wilson, right?
Bobby who?
Bobby Brooks Wilson.
I am not.
He's Jackie's son.
Oh,
and he was given up at birth, and he was in the foster care system in South Carolina, and he was absolutely unaware of his biological father. He was in the Navy. He began singing in Hawaii, and what happened while he was in Hawaii is other musicians and the fans and all that said, you know, you sound and look exactly like Jackie Wilson. So a DNA test eventually confirmed that that is his biological father. So
his name is Bobby Brooks Wilson.
Yes, and he tours with shows. Jackie Wilson, The Legend Continues, Bobby Brooks Wilson, Red Tie Tour, and there's a documentary, The Last Teardrop.
I haven't seen it. Is that like, how old is that? I've never heard it.
Yeah,
I've heard of it.
It's in the last decade, I think. But now, not to be confused with Jackie Wilson Jr., who actually was Jackie's son from his first marriage, but he died in 1970 when he was 16. And he had other children as well, but only Bobby Brooks Wilson has pursued a career and touring like that. And you can see him. There are YouTube clips of him, Mr. Entertainment, Bobby Brooks Wilson, and all that. So you can look at that.
There's also somebody that I keep running across, and I don't know if you know who he is, but I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's like Blaze apostrophe Michael Lizmore. Lizzie Emore, I think.
Yeah. Does that ring I always thought it was Blase because of the way it's pronounced, but Blase Lizmore. Yeah.
And
he was from Jacksonville, as far as that. But I don't know all that much about
well,
him.
He was on
Capitol for a while.
Oh! I think I saw that.
Yeah.
But anyway, he is a big fan of Jackie Wilson. He was a big Garland Green fan and everything. And he listens to the Sunday show.
Oh, great!
But I want to mention him, but I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Well, I'm sure if you go ahead, again, go to YouTube, because there are a lot of clips, including him being interviewed and including other stuff like that. There's one on that Facebook site, Keep Our Music Alive, that thing. His name is Michael Lizmore. I have a very strong feeling that's an audio, so you can probably hear when they say Blaze or Blase, whichever it is. But, yeah.
I wish, and I'm trying to get in touch with, well, anyway, I'm going to put a special together with him, bottom line, and I plan to do it this week, and I'm like,
okay, I just looked it up, and it is Blase, so just like I thought. And, of course, that's kind of weird, because, of course, to be blasé is to be unimpressed and different, you know, bored, all those things. So, but it is, apparently, they say it's blasé. Now, of course, this is the Internet, so who knows?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I plan to do this special on Jackie Wilson, because I grew up on his music, and I love it, too. And with the ballads, I understand. Some I loved, some I wasn't so hot about. But anyway, I like the up-tempo stuff, of course. But I went and found this original master tape that I have here. And then when I went in the studio and tried to put all this together, I mean, it was just overwhelming. And I'm like, I can't have this ready by this week. I can't.
So then don't.
Well, I'm not, because I want it to be complete, and
yeah.
I'd like to get somebody like Michael Lizmore on there with me, and I'd like to get, of course, Will Howard, who has the site on Facebook, Jackie Wilson Music and Memories.
Okay.
That you know, and so I'd like, you know, if I do something, I'd like to do it to completion.
Right.
And if I hurry something up and throw it together, that's not the way I work.
Well, you know, no reason to. You can play one of the Jackie Wilson records, mention that it was his birthday, and mention what you're working on. Do a pre-tease.
Were you a Jackie Wilson fan?
Like I say, the up-tempo stuff, absolutely. Big time.
What was your favorite?
You know, it changes from time to time, but, You Keep Me Walking was one of them, but that's not the absolute favorite. Let me think about this, because there are so many, and I like them. I like It's So Fine. I like My Heart Is Calling. The Joke Is Not
God,
on Me.
Oh, God, I just love that one. I just love it.
Yeah, You Got Me Walking, you know, Am I the Man? That might be that might be my favorite, Am I the Man? I don't know, but I'm just, in my mind, I'm going through all the songs, and there's a number of them that are good, but, you know, like Why Can't You Be Mine is really nice, but, yeah, I'll go with Am I the Man right now, but it'll change.
But you know what, after he did Higher and Higher.
Yeah.
He put out one called Since You Showed Me How to Be Happy.
Uh-huh.
And that thing just blew me away.
So play it.
You know it?
Yeah, but play it on the show.
Oh, I am. But I just kind of got overwhelmed because I'd found this tape. And you know what it's like.
Hang on a minute. Don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are. Because John says I got to stop talking right this minute, so I am on WGN Radio.
instead of someone else. Time after time, you saved our love from destruction.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. It is a great song, but I've only got a couple minutes left to talk to Johnny this hour. But yes, since you show me how to be happy, how could that be a bad record? Carl Davis produced it and Gerald Sims co-wrote it. It's got everything going for it. So this week on soulofthecity.net, there'll be a little Jackie Wilson and maybe a tease for coming Jackie Wilson. But what else we got happening?
It's too early to tell you because we're all wrapped up. And that's why I said I've been dealing with technical stuff all day long because... You know, going through and finding an old tape and then getting a reel-to-reel that works and then tracing down hum and all this kind of crap. I mean, it's just I feel like, man, I'm getting squeezed here.
Yeah.
And I don't do well if I feel that way. I've got to do it, you know, laid back and I want to.
So relax and forget about it. Just play the stuff you like.
I might do Johnny Taylor this week. I don't know.
All right.
But thanks to you and all your listeners. Really, really thank you. I've had some very, very great response from your vast audience.
So soulofthecity.net, Sunday night, 6 p.m. to midnight. And if you can't
thank you. Last week when I called you, we weren't on the air at all when I was talking about all that.
Right. Right, absolutely. But it was on the stream. So
it was on the stream.
Yes, yes. and yes, so absolutely. And if for some reason Soul of the City doesn't work because .net doesn't work, if you've got an aggregator or whatever, HoustonRadioPlatinum.com will get you there. So Central Time, 6 to midnight Sunday, Johnny Goins, Labor of Love. And it's just terrific. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, that was well said. I'm too tired to have said it myself.
All right. Talk to you soon. Better luck.
Okay, thank you, Raleigh. Right, good night to you and all your friends.
All right, absolutely. Yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, not only finding a reel-to-reel, but finding it in the right format. You know, you find out you've got a quarter-track tape, you got a half-track machine, got all that and more. So I feel for Johnny. So we'll pick it up right there with another hour of this on WGN Radio.
Lover, please, please come back. Don't take a train coming down the track. Don't, please, don't leave me. Don't leave me in misery. You would never hold me so near. You would never call me dear. Don't you know I'd die for you? Now you've gone, that's what I'll do. Lover, please, please come back. Don't take a train coming down the track. Don't, please, don't leave me. Don't leave me in misery. About a love that went all wrong. The girl left the boy just as bad. Now she's gone, she's so sad. Lover, please, please come back. Don't take a train coming down the track. Don't, please, don't leave me. Don't leave me in misery. You would never hold me so near.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and there it is. Lover, please, Clyde McFatter. 1962 on Mercury. If you look at the label, it'll say for the writer Bill Swan, and yep, that's Billy Swan. He was a teen in Cape Girardeau, Missouri when he wrote it. So yes, decade later, I can help and all that kind of stuff. All right, so 888-876-5593, and we got Brian in Seneca. What's up tonight, Brian?
Not much. How are you doing, Raleigh?
Can't complain.
I had a request, and hopefully if you can get to it more quickly than you have to pass request, it might still make sense to the audience.
Oh, well, what is it?
Bye Bye Blackbird by Red Fox.
Oh, God. All right.
It is safe, especially during the hours of refuge. You could even play it on Wally Phillips if he was still around. And Red Fox is an amazingly good singer.
Yeah, he used.
But he puts his own little twist on the lyrics too.
Yeah, he was on the Dutu label for quite a while, and some of it were the party records, but some of it was absolutely singing. So sure, all right, I will look for that.
Yes, and if you can add a dedication to the request, it's still hanging out there.
Okay, which one?
That would be the Train song by Vashti Bunyan.
Oh, you were the one who wanted that. All right, because we played the 17 pink elephant thing, and all right, so, and I didn't know who it was because I blamed it on someone else. And all right, so the Train song, Vashti Bunyan, British folk singer. Yes, I saw 17 pink sugar elephants. Yes, all right, so yeah, hopefully you didn't miss that, and we'll do the Train song.
No, I heard it.
Okay. And who do you want it for?
If I can get away with it now. If I can't get away with it, I'll accept no as an answer gratefully. But my dedication would be to Brandon Johnson.
Why not? Of course, this shows you what I know. I don't know who Brandon Johnson is. So now I got to look that up, I guess. All right. I will do so. All right, Brian, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
So, all right. So who's Brandon Johnson? Let me get away with it. Is there a problem with it? Why don't I know these things? Brandon Johnson is an American politician and former educator who since served as the 57th mayor of Chicago. I don't know. Shows you what I tell you. There's no politics on this show. Since 2023, has served as the 57th mayor of Chicago. A member of the Democratic Party, he previously served on the Cook County Board of Commissioners from 2018 to 2023. All right. Well, there you go. Yeah. No wonder, Brian, what do you mean she doesn't know? No, I don't know. So, yeah, who is it in, I'll never forget, in Denver? There was a woman who was the local rep, and I remember when I was on KOA, I had to do this interview with her and Mike Rosen, who was the real political guy at KOA, and I remember asking before the show, what party is she? And he almost fell over. All right, well, hey, so what are we going to do here? Robert is in LaGrange. Welcome to WGN Radio. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Robert.
What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to know your opinion or your reason why on the old turntable, why the 16 and two-third RPM speed didn't last very long.
Remember, well, the 16 and two-third, yeah, right, yeah, right. Well, the size of it alone was, you know, the transcription discs, it was fine for that. But, you know,
right,
you're at 16 and two-thirds, you're not going to get much in the way of quality as far as that. So I'd say quality and size. Again, the transcription discs, like I've got a bunch of old 16 inches, like radio station jingles and things like that, or commercials. But they weren't used. They were called transcription discs. Whole radio shows, you know, you'd
right,
play that, you know, like,
right,
here's the Green Hornet, side one, side two, you know, that kind of thing. But it just, it more than outlived its usefulness. It says turntables here. I thought we were going to have the argument of belt versus direct, and I always go direct. I wouldn't dare think of a belt-driven turntable.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah.
You'd be surprised how many people do.
Yeah. Well, okay. Could I throw in a couple of requests?
Why not? Let's get our sheet out.
All right. Since we were on Jackie Wilson, I'd like to request one of my favorites, Reed Petit.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And another man with a great voice, I thought, Roy Orbison. One of my favorites by him was Blue Angel.
Okay. Sha-la-la.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You got
okay,
it.
Okay.
All right. Good deal. Thanks.
Okay,
appreciate
it. Sure.
All right.
Bye-bye now.
And, of course, Reed Petit wasn't invented for the Jackie Wilson record. It was a phrase in parlance before that. You probably could, if you had to blame any one person, go to Louis Jordan. And, of course, Berry Gordy co-wrote it, and that's really what started Jackie Wilson as a solo act. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. And Kimberly, welcome back to WGN Radio. Are you there, Kimberly? No, we've lost Kimberly. All right. I don't know. Hopefully she's doing well and everybody else has as well. So Chris is in South Carolina. Chris, what are we doing tonight?
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
Nothing much. I just called to tell you about the Capitol Theater in Lawrence,
uh-huh.
in my neighboring county.
Okay.
That opened up in 1926.
Okay, and still going strong?
Yeah, it's still going strong. It's run by the city of Lawrence, and they show movies, like free movies,
uh-huh.
every two Fridays in a month.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, they've been closed since 64, and then they reopened in 2005.
Well, hopefully it's not moldy.
Oh, yeah, because Lawrence, they still have two antique movie theaters that's, one of them is barely operating, the other one's not. You know the Echo Theater,
mm-hmm.
the story about that.
No, what's the deal with the Echo Theater? I'll bite.
You know, it was a redneck shop, and
all right,
and the Reverend bought the building out, and
okay,
they haven't done anything about it.
Okay, all right. Is this the one in Easley?
In Lawrence.
Oh, in Lawrence. Okay, all right. Yeah, good enough.
Yeah, and the Echo Theater is empty right now. It's like condemned.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know that, like many things throughout the South in the day, it was segregated, but that wasn't the part. It was the deal that the Nazi Party and the KKK had their Aryan Nations World Congress there. Oh, my dear God.
Yeah, it was a redneck shop there.
Literally.
1996 to 2012.
Right, the world-famous redneck shop. They actually said that. So let me ask you, when you've got something like that where they're coming out in the open and they're selling racist material and they're headquarters for white supremacists, what did people in the town think of this?
They did not like it. They wanted them out of there, and they made a movie called Burden with Forrest Whitaker playing Reverend David Kennedy.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it was a nightmare when they came in there and bought up that old movie theater, an antique movie theater. And why would you put a divided store in there back in those days where people are united?
Yeah, because you could, because they got it cheaply, no doubt. And now, interestingly, I'm sure that while they were around, they were absolutely humiliating and terrorizing local citizens. This is just hideous. As far as that goes, why do you think they picked that area of South Carolina, let alone the Echo? Why do you think they picked it?
I don't know. They probably don't have a clue. They just want to get their word out.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, you know, there have been a lot of prank calls at that redneck shop, too.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Now, in terms of, thank God it went away in 2012, but how did it disappear? I mean, what caused it to dissolve?
What caused it to dissolve? They was evicted by the owner of the building that the former Klan member Michael Burton gave.
Oh, no, wait, whoa, whoa. You're telling me that the owner of the building was a former Klan member? Okay, well, that would explain how they got there, but what caused this owner to have a change of heart?
Oh, because he didn't want to be associated with the Triple K, and he talked to him because he was homeless and he was hungry.
Mm-hmm. That's,
and he wanted a roof over his head.
Okay. And I guess it was pretty much nothing for a while. And what, it's now New Beginning Ministry, the Baptists?
Yeah, the building's still empty. It still has Echo on the thing.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures.
I think the Echo, it closed in 1983 as a movie theater.
Yeah, right. That's,
and it was vacant all that time.
Right, and I know they've got the Echo Project. I don't know how that's going or what they're planning to do with it, but I've heard
they
that
haven't
they...
done probably nothing to it.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much what I thought. What a story. Yeah, how amazing.
Media circus.
Yeah. Oh, it's a circus, all right. I'll tell you what. I'm very pleased that the residents of Lawrence didn't embrace it.
Oh, like it has a sign that says that anyone offends you, leave. If any of this stuff offends you, leave. And they put that notice on that door.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
So and, that's
the Capitol Theater, yeah, but they more of a, like, their theater's okay, and it's been vacant since 64, and then they reopened it in 2005.
Huh. All right.
And their first movie they shown was Charlie's Aunt.
Okay.
When opening.
All right.
Yeah,
fascinating.
I'm planning to go there because, you know, they showed the original Fly movies at that theater, the Vincent Price one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I looked that on the old periodical newspapers in Lawrence.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because, you know, they have a balcony, too, where it was segregated because theaters back then was segregated, and they had to go on that side door, that stairwell that
yeah.
to the balcony.
Yeah.
All theaters were like that back then in the South.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, sadly, that's historically accurate of most of the South, unconscionable segregation. But you usually don't have it culminating in being the redneck shop. So, fascinating. Well, I guess it's moved from meeting space for hate to now it's a cultural deal, and that's nice. All right.
And it's an abandoned building, and nobody's using it right now.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what New Beginning Missionary Baptist Church ultimately does with it. I'll try to check out Burden. I know it was out about, 6 years ago, and never paid
yeah,
it any
I got
attention.
Yeah, I watched it last week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a good movie to watch.
Yeah, just horrible. Human nature. The human condition.
Yeah.
I don't even like to think about it. That's why we don't talk about anything that matters. I think I saw that the building had been condemned a year ago, and so that
it is.
All right. So in order for them to use it, they would have to do an awful lot of work, and I guess that's what the Echo Project is about.
Yeah, I'll go through the city of Lawrence.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. So that building is just like a time bomb. Like, you walk in there, anything can happen.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, interesting information.
Popcorn machine and stuff going.
Well, yeah, I would suspect so. I would also think some of the infrastructure was gone as well, which is the problem there. They removed a lot of the interior through a demolition permit. And so I don't think they ever got a permit to renovate it. So I'd say from a public safety standpoint, the city is going to make sure that it's not used unless the Echo Project can go through whatever they need to make it structurally sound.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I'm glad you told me about it. Had no idea. I'm gonna look for that documentary. Thank you. Thanks for the call, Chris.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Raleigh.
Okay, bye. Yeah, that is fascinating to me. Yeah, I've never understood any of it. But yeah, the KKK has to take it over for a tribute to hate. Yeah. Too much time on your hands all the way around. Well, some things just stick in your mind. That's the title of Vashti Bunyan's album that has all her singles and demos on it between, say, 64 and 67, which would include the request that Brian had, and we'll play it next on WGN Radio.
Traveling north, traveling north to find you. Train was beating the wind in my eyes. Don't even know what I say when I find you. Call out your name, love, don't be surprised. It's so many miles and so long since I've
There it is, from the album Just Stick in Your Mind. Some Things Just Stick in Your Mind, Singles and Demos, Vashti Bunyan. And that was what Brian wanted to play for the mayor. So there, yeah, I swear, I don't pay attention to this stuff. Last time I checked, it was Lori Lightfoot. And this guy's been in, what, since 2023? Look, I've been busy. All right, so there you have it. And there was various pictures of him online. And, you know, obviously I assume you approve your photo stills, but there was one that literally looked like he was being electrocuted, like he had his finger in the light socket. And I thought, and why did he say that? And, you know, like I say, it's a publicity show. Why did he say that one was okay? So I guess trying to make a point that I just didn't see. So there you have it for Brian and the mayor. So 888-876-5593. Eduardo in Tampa, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Let me request a song here before I talk a little bit about young people being more involved in activity, especially since we got the U.S. soccer thing coming up. Sonny Rollins, I'm going to request the Sonny Rollins song, Pa's Pal.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's 1956, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
You're already
I forgot about this. I'm in the news. Hang on, don't go away.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, forgot completely about the news. So, yeah, obviously I don't listen to it or I'd know who was the mayor. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, it's Muddy Waters, and that was Laura's request, Park or Not, fine song, Got My Mojo Working, actually a flip side, On Chess, a 45 in 1957. Fine song. All right, now, we were interrupted by the news because I wasn't paying attention. Well, that's sort of my theme song, isn't it? And I was about to welcome Eduardo on the air. I did off the air, but we'll welcome again officially. So now you're on the air. Eduardo, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, so I don't know if you heard my request. So Sonny Rollins, Paul's pal.
Okay, Sonny Rollins. No, I just wrote this down. Yeah. Okay, but okay,
it's
yes.
Like 1956.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I was listening to some of his songs over the weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to talk a little bit about the young people, and I'm glad we got the World Cup because this gets young kids excited. They said that 14 million more playing soccer than before. That was 10 million, so that's great to hear. One of the weekend CBS shows had a thing where they showed these young people where they put the electronic devices to the side and they were at the table, you know, socializing, playing games and all that with other young people. So that's great to see, because there's one stat that I thought was very disappointing, and that 40% of people that graduate when they go to work, that degree doesn't even apply to what they're working at.
Well, of course not. But remember, originally, universities and colleges, more to the point, were not meant for vocational education. They weren't meant to prepare you for a job. They were mostly liberal arts college for the more upper crust people to give them a well-rounded view of society. Not like we're preparing you for a job, but of course, over the years, it became exactly that. And I'd say the majority of majors probably in the colleges of arts and sciences do not make you employable. You know, if you're a history major or an English lit major or sociology major, that's not going to get you in the door for a job. So the question is, why are you going? You know, and the explosion toward college really started in the early 60s and, of course, was exacerbated tremendously by Vietnam. Everybody was majoring in, I don't want to go to war, and who could blame them? So enrollment was almost a de facto thing. If you were male in the mid-60s, latter 60s, you were going to go to college because you got that 2S deferment, you know. But other than, they also had educationally a real move, and I thought this was insane, away from voc-tech education in the high schools. It was seen somehow of like lower classes. I'll tell you what a plumber makes today certainly is a lot more than anybody who majored in English or literature. You know, but nonetheless, the voc-tech thing fell out of favor in many cases. I don't think it's good. I hope we're returning to it.
Yeah, there was that famous, well, I don't know if it's famous, but anybody living on the South side like I ever did, it was close to 26th and Cal, where the jail was, but 31st and Kedzie, they had the Washburn.
Uh-huh.
It was called Washburn Trade School, something like that. But I know the first word was Washburn.
Uh-huh.
Anybody that's from the South, they know about Washburn.
Yeah, no, it's exactly what it was, Washburn Trade School, and it closed in 93, and it opened a year later as part of the community colleges.
Okay.
But it was great. And, you know, like we mentioned before, Donald Byrd went to Cass Polytech in Chicago, which also was great. These were wonderful opportunities for kids.
You know what else they mentioned? The word networking. And I got to tell you, that's an interesting word, networking. They said they found more jobs networking. I got to tell you, my real estate agent, when I moved from Chicago to Tampa, was networking.
Well, I'm a big believer in that. I certainly in careers like, for instance, broadcasting, where, you know, there's no real measure of that is objective. It's all subjective. You know, it's one person's opinion that something's good or not more than anything else. And I always said from early on, the bank account you need if you're going to be in radio is a bank account of contacts. And I never once in my 32 cities and 50 radio stations never once got a job without a direct conduit. It was either somebody I knew or somebody that I knew, but it was never just send a tape. Absolutely not.
or looking something up somewhere.
Well, there was no internet, of course, or anything like that. But you know, when you were looking, then, you'd go to the newsstands that they used to have and buy the newspapers from all over the country, and you'd read the trades to see what was open or what wasn't. But you know, I've mentioned many times that I got to WIBC in Indianapolis, where I had no business being on that radio station. I clearly wasn't good enough. But I was a female with a first phone, you know, an engineering license, and the desire to work late nights. And I used to joke that, you know, I could have been speaking Farsi on the tape and they would have hired me. While that's true, the real reality is no, because I had a conduit. I had somebody who knew the people in charge very well who called and vouched for me. Whether I would have gotten it without that, I don't know. But even there, it was directly related to a conduit. And so, yeah, they call it networking today. I always called it your bank account of contacts. It's vital. It's vital in every field.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who, kind of put it down, don't understand that contacts are necessary but not sufficient. In other words, if you don't have the goods to pull it off, whatever job you're going for, it doesn't matter how many people you know. It's not going to be nepotism. But if you do have the goods, the difference between getting the job and not is who do you know? Period.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's different today. Certainly it's not in media. I don't know about other fields because I've never tried to get a job in another field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are very, very good points.
Yeah, so I'm sure that in more objective, professions where it literally can be measured, the success rate, even sales, I guess, that's one thing. But anything subjective, you know, like being a talent, if you will, that's completely subjective. You better know people.
Yeah. What's your, I'm going to leave you because we're shutting down, you know, you're going to lose 15 minutes and, I mean, there's still tomorrow and Thursday. Okay. What's your schedule? Because I know you got the Stanley Cup.
Tomorrow is a full show starting at 10 and Thursday is a slight delay for the Stanley Cup, depending. Of course, they could go into double overtime or something or whatever they call it.
Right.
And it'd be really late. But for right now, like tonight, we pretty much got in on time. I think we're 15 minutes late.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah. Okay, Riley. Well, again, thank
you. I'll look forward to it. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yep. Yeah, and I, to the best of my knowledge, there's nothing tomorrow. I haven't looked at the schedule, but I will, so that I'm not blindsided by that. But in the meantime, we have, what is with my magic twanger tonight? We have Kimberly and Dalton, who has called back. All right, Kimberly, what's up tonight?
Can you hear me this time?
I hear you fine.
Okay, hi. I had two questions and one short story.
Okay.
The one question is, we had static when you played that song with Hushabye. Was that the name of it, and who did it? Because it's perfect for the baby.
The Mystics, M-Y-S-T-I-C-S, Mystics, and Mystics. The song is Hushabye.
Okay.
One word. It was on Lori, and I'm sure that's on YouTube.
Oh, sure. I'll look that up.
Okay.
And then we didn't have you on the first half hour. We thought you were delayed tonight, so... Did you happen to play the song for my granddaughter, or if you did, I'll play the rerun. If not, I'll wait till whenever you do it.
I will play it tomorrow, but yes, and I wrote this down, and let me put it to the top of the list. You're talking about I Say a Little Prayer. I Say a Little Prayer.
Yeah.
I'll play it next. How about that?
Oh, okay, and then one little short story.
Yes.
You and I think Laura brought up George Carlin a couple weeks ago. I think it was Laura.
Uh-huh.
And, there's a little story about my mom. She hasn't had the energy to call you and tell you it. But anyway, years ago, there was a steakhouse downtown called Aunt Reese's. And my parents had gone to dinner there. So my mother was waiting outside for my dad to pull the car up to go home. And she was all dressed up, nice dress, you know, whatever. And a guy came up to her looking homeless, T-shirt, jeans, hair with a ponytail. And he stops in front of her and looks at her and points to her. He says, "You're going to die. You're going to die."
What?
And I mean, he shook her all up. And in the meantime, my dad came. But it was on, and it bothered her for quite a while, but it was on, he was on Johnny Carson some years later. And he brought it up that in Chicago, he tried out a thing on a lady in front of the steak, on Reese's Steakhouse in Chicago.
No
and
kidding.
He walked up to her and did that to her. It was on, he did, said it on Johnny Carson. So I had, when you talked about George Carlin, I wanted her to tell you the story or that you know the story because that was something else.
That's a great story. Did he happen to say on Carson exactly what he was hoping your mother would react? I mean, I can't imagine.
I don't remember. I keep thinking somewhere along the line we'll see the rerun, but I would imagine he was looking for a reaction.
Well, yeah.
What he could share, that he could share, but I don't remember the exact reason.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Well, the guy who really got him going was Dan Sorkin from WCFL. George Carlin used to be an accountant. And he was arrested in Chicago in 1962 alongside Lenny Bruce. He had nothing to do with obscenity, but he was put in the same paddy wagon. His deal was he just wouldn't, he was a stand-up, and he wouldn't show police his ID. And so they threw him in the same paddy wagon as Lenny Bruce.
My goodness. Yeah. Now, this had to be the early 70s, I think, but anyway, it was
fascinating. I love it. That's a lot of fun to actually kind of get the rest of the story. I love it.
I know. I'll keep hoping for the rerun because that I don't think we can remember, but she, that was shocking at that time.
Well,
but at any rate,
I'll give you a tip. If it happened while Johnny was still in New York, there is no rerun. Because they didn't save the tapes. But if it happened, there are some clips, but not the tapes. That's when Johnny went ballistic. I mean ballistic. He didn't need a microphone to hear him coast to coast. But that's also when Carson Productions took ownership of the show.
Later.
Yeah, if it was
in color, and I think it was later.
Well, it could be in color either way, but yeah, but if it was...
I mean, it was a long time later. Yeah. It wasn't, like, immediate, so, some years later.
Okay, interesting stuff.
Probably the 80s.
Oh, yeah, well, that was all L.A. Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay, good night.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All the L.A. stuff, 100% preserved, but the New York stuff, just a few, and that was the good stuff, too, just a few clips here and there. But yes, I say a little prayer. It'll come up next on WGN Radio.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Walk home in my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now, I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you'll stay in my heart. I say a little prayer for you. At work I just take time, and all through my coffee break time, I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you'll stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part. Oh, how I'll love you together, together. That's how it must be to live without you. Would only mean heartbreak for me.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. 1967, Dionne Warwick was on fire. All that stuff was on Scepter, and yes, it was Backrack and David who wrote and produced it, but everybody knows that, but not many people are probably aware that Phil Ramone was the recording engineer on that, and so much more. So that's right. Kimberly called last night, play that for Thea, who is doing much better, and we are thrilled to hear that. So 888-876-5593 if you want the waning moments. When things are particularly quiet and nobody's calling, well, the first thing I think of is, oh, man, well, let's see what's going on with today's edition of 2020 News.
Fireworks fiasco, plus Soros dump and porta potty pandemonium. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news, real stories, real fun. Blasted bungle in the jungle. Boombox badness in South L.A. A fireworks fireball blew a backyard bungalow to bits with witnesses wailing they found parts of him scattered through the smoke-choked street. Cops and crews combing the crispy catastrophe while neighbors ducked debris from the pyrotechnic pandemonium. Another reminder that backyard bomb builders don't just fizzle. Sometimes they fricassee the whole freaking block. Times scare. You never knew what hell you'd get at Midtown New York's Hotel Carter. Once labeled the dirtiest hotel in America, gloom and doom with the view was the scene of grisly crimes like the half-naked woman thrown out a window, an infant beaten to death, and a night manager murdered in the lobby. Owners of the filthy forlorn Fleabag managed to halt it being auctioned off, but hopes to turn the 25-story tower of terror into housing for artists remain the stuff of dreams and screams. Latrine light up. In New Jersey, a booming bathroom blast blew a battered blue porta-potty two-bits at a bustling Ocean County job site, bringing bomb squads, baffled builders, and barking bomb-sniffing beagles barreling into the block. Cops say the combustive crapper catastrophe could have been caused by an explosive device. Nobody was busted, nobody was blasted, but one Andy Dump's weekly wash-up was wildly wiped out. Suddenly, baking brownies became a hazardous occupation. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.
All right, so there you have it. Kevin Gershon does such a wonderful job with that and the writing on that, and Steve, his buddy, also just, I think, classic writing. And anyway, news that actually existed, every bit of it, stories are real, but the way they tell it is not necessarily damn near fricasseed the whole block. I love that. Okay, well, anyhow, 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH if you want the waning moments. Now, tomorrow night is, I do believe, a full show, but before I say that, let me first take a look here at WGNRadio.com, which tells you all the time. All you have to do is go to weekday and then upcoming schedule and sports. That's the place to look. And you scroll down and you find out that, full show starting at 10 on Thursday, right after the Stanley Cup final. That's game 5, don't you know? The Vegas Golden Knights at the Carolina Hurricanes. So, yeah, that's it. Then, of course, that's pretty much it. I'm trying to see when the next games are. Of course, you know, we'll see how they do. But the following week, assuming they're still playing, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is the following week. I guess we have to find out. If they have a game, it'll be Wednesday, June 17th, for the Stanley Cup final. And if it's necessary. So it'll be a full show or not. But anyway, tomorrow is a full show. And then after that, it is a full show. Not a full show, but probably mostly a full show. Probably about 10-15, I'm guessing, unless they go into some weird kind of overtime, which is always possible. It's always fun to look at television and movies and see that some of them are just like written by psychics. It really makes you wonder. And, for instance, the Titanic, there was actually a novel years before it. It was called the 14 years before it, the Titan. And it was Futility, which was later retitled The Wreck of the Titan, telling the story of a massive British ocean liner, the Titan, described by everyone as unsinkable, struck an iceberg in the North Atlantic, carried too few lifeboats, and sank in April. It literally mirrored the tragedy. Makes you wonder. And then, of course, when it comes to science fiction, yeah, how did cartoonists know exactly what spacesuits were going to look like 40 years later? But it sure seems like that. Or Isaac Asimov, who imagined the iPad, well, more or less, back in 1964. And that was just a little essay for the New York Times where he described life in 2014. Among his predictions, people would use a compact screen to read books, watch videos, communicate with others. And literally, it foresaw smart electronics all the way around. In 1998, on The Simpsons, when you dish upon a star, Homer crashes into a Hollywood meeting and they see a sign that reads, 20th Century Fox, a division of Walt Disney Company. At the time, it was just sort of a nod to Disney's ever-growing empire. It certainly wasn't true, but I'm done. Oh, I'm over. I'm talking to myself again. I can stop. I can pick it up again tomorrow night, 21 hours from now. So until then, we'll say that that's a wrap, and we'll thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling, and I hope to hear from you tomorrow night. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.